We have on the line with us this morning Jim Ellinger. Good morning, Jim, and how are you? Thanks for coming on the program. And also with us is Dan Toomey, who will be doing the majority of this interview, and I'll just sort of fade off in the background.
Yeah, morning, guys. Good morning, Lowell. Glad to be talking to you guys from the live music capital of the world, Austin, Texas.
Gee, you're from Texas?
No. We're from Austin.
Oh, Austin.
The bluest city in the reddest state.
Oh, okay. Because there's another guy from Texas that I don't like very much. I don't know if you who I'm talking about. It begins with B and ends with H and sounds like what you pick up after the cows.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, we're more of a Jim Hightower kind of place. I travel around the world a lot and constantly have to say, no, we're not from Texas. We're from Austin.
I've
said that a million times.
Well, Jim, I had met you at the Grassroots Radio Conference recently. It was out in Madison, Wisconsin.
Right, Dan.
And we got talking, and you were telling me about your experiences with the people from New Orleans when they came to Texas and were in the Astrodome.
Mm-hmm.
And you had an experience with FEMA and with the bureaucracy, and you might want to elaborate on that because I think it's a really interesting story that people ought to know about.
Yeah, sure is, and it generated just an enormous amount of press across the U.S. and even worldwide. Essentially, I got run over by the FEMA PR machine. For your listeners, imagine back 1 year ago this week, the height of the Katrina disaster was unfolding. The hurricane had just missed New Orleans, but then, of course, the levees collapsed and the disaster became dramatically worse. Hundreds of thousands of people fled New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. And Houston, Texas, the fourth largest city in America, just about 3 hours west of the Louisiana border, became one of the largest points for evacuees to gather. Something like 25,000 people found themselves living with a handful of possessions or no possessions at all in the cavernous Houston Astrodome. Many of these people had come from the Superdome and then found themselves in the Astrodome. The situation there was fairly chaotic, but nowhere near as bad as on the ground in New Orleans. And most of these folks were poor, black, with little of resources. They couldn't drive. Many of them were medically challenged, a lot of older women with diabetes, and men in walkers. And as Texans kind of opened their arms and attempted to help these folks out, Texas-friendly manner, my group here in Austin, in the Texas capital, about 2.5 hours from Houston, called Austin Airwaves, which is a small nonprofit 501c3 that deals with radio issues. I'd put a small radio station on the air here in town and had worked around the world putting radio stations on the air or helping existing stations. Been to Mozambique to do radio theater. I've been to Panama recently helping their radio stations. And we were contacted by folks associated with KPFT, the Pacifica station in Houston, and the Houston Indie Media crowd, and said, wonder if it's possible to get an LPFM license to broadcast emergency information to these evacuees.
And the LPFM is what?
It's a low-power FM license. The FCC created a new class of radio licenses a couple years ago in response to the million letters that they received saying that most of the radio stations in any given town are owned by Clear Channel or Sinclair, and we are losing localness.
Jim, let me interrupt you for a second here. Speaking of radio, can you maybe just change your position with the mic a little bit? You're squelching out a bit at this end, okay?
Okay. Is this any better?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, along with the help of the Prometheus Radio Project of Philadelphia and Michael Brown of Michael Brown Engineering, let me see if I can grab it better. We were able to, how's that sound better?
Oh, yeah. There you go.
There we go.
Put the muffler on it.
We were able to get the Federal Communications Commission to give us a couple of low-power FM radio licenses in just a matter of hours. And if you know anything about the FCC, that's pretty miraculous. The last radio license I had acquired from the FCC took 11 years. The next four took about 48 hours. Anyhow, I proceeded down to Houston with the radio licenses in hand, figuratively speaking, and we're going to put these stations on the air, all to serve this kind of temporary community of people. And the situation was that the local authorities were having a great deal of trouble, and they were quite frank about this and quite public about it. They're having a great deal of trouble of getting information to the evacuees. There were rumors abound. There were missing people. The Red Cross was there, but unable to get information and services to people because they didn't know where to gather. People were being locked out of the Astrodome overnight because they didn't know they had to be back by 10 p.m. when they locked the gates. And just a whole range of communication problems. So I presented myself to this rather large bureaucracy and said, I'm here to broadcast. I've got a license from the FCC. I've got a letter from the governor, Rick Perry, or Governor Hairdo, the Texas governor's FEMA man, has said that please help me out. The mayor of Houston, a good Democrat, Bill White, said please let this man in and let him provide these radio services for these evacuees. And long story short, we ran into roadblock after roadblock after roadblock from what we learned to be Harris County officials. And as soon as we would come across one of these Harris County officials, we would Google them, and we would find out that they, of course, were Republican Party operatives. Harris County, of course, was the home of the Republican Revolution, George Bush's home turf. And most of these Harris County officials, that is, Harris County, which controls the Astrodome, located within the city of Houston, generally speaking, Harris County is Republican, generally speaking, Houston is Democrat, they were not at all interested in our providing radio services. At one point, this one woman said, well, you're going to broadcast a radio station into these people? Yes. Well, they don't have radios. Fine, we'll give them a radio. I said, you have 10,000 radios? I said, yes, I'll come back tomorrow with 10,000 radios. And sure enough, the next day I went down to the Just 99 Cent store and made the biggest purchase in the history of the Just 99 Cent store and purchased 10,000 little 99 cent radios. Went back to the Astrodome, handed one to the lady, and said, we're prepared to give everyone in the Astrodome a free radio. And then they said, well, can they listen to other radio stations besides yours? And I said, well, sure. I mean, we don't have radios that are just tuned just to our temporary radio station. She goes, well, so they could listen to other stations in Houston? I said, yeah, I suppose. She goes, well, could they listen to rap music and gangsta music? And I said, I suppose, ma'am. And they said, well, we're worried that the gangsta rap music would incite them to violence. And I
old guys in walkers, I suppose, right?
I'm sorry?
Old guys in walkers would be incited
to
violence.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of young kids, and there was violence there, and there was, you know, there were a lot of problems. But, you know, the racial overtures of suggesting that we give someone a radio and that they immediately listen to gangsta rap music and become instigated to commit violence was stunning to hear. And they said no. And we came back the next day with some attorneys and tried a couple different angles, and we started giving their name out to the press, and various politicians called. And then we learned that a guy by the name of Bob Eccles, who is the chief, the most highly elected official there in Harris County, is the county judge, who is a well-known Republican, very powerful, been involved in many political battles, was a hardcore right-wing Republican. Again, you can look up Bob Harris, Harris County, Bob Eccles, E-C-K-E-L-S, Harris County Judge, and you'll see this guy's political career. And they apparently were in a conference call with the White House. And apparently, we learned later, this came up as an issue. And ultimately, the word came down was that, no, we don't care if the FCC gave you the license. We're not interested in you having a radio station for and by these people, and you can get the hell out of here. Fairly blunt.
Mm.
And we were not prepared for this. I've been in situations before where we go into a community and provide them a radio or help them out, kind of step back, let the community take it over, and kind of work the press, which I have some experience in. So we issued a press release that generated just absolutely unbelievable publicity called What It Feels Like to Be Run Over by the FEMA PR Machine. And what it was is that, as we now well known, that, you know, Brownie and Bush and Chertoff and the rest of these bums were much more concerned about making the president look good than they were about saving the lives of American citizens. And I just happened to be one more road bump in the way. And along the way, we got these people's names and their cell phone numbers, and several of these people were county officials whose job it was to deal with the public, including a couple of public information officers. So we started disseminating these phone numbers out to these people. And as we told people, well, we got these licenses to broadcast emergency information to these evacuees who were having trouble getting information, that were desperate for, and who the FEMA officials are admitting they're having difficulty getting to them, but were being blocked for apparently political reasons by this local county official. And many of the reporters, and mind you, this was not just Democracy Now! And Randy Rhodes and the Village Voice. This was the national edition of the Los Angeles Times. Front page, 2 days in a row. This was Defense News. This was the Pentagon News. This was the Australian Broadcasting Corporation and scores and scores of radio and TV and newspapers across the country. And they were somewhat skeptical and even incredulous that this could happen. I said, well, here, call them up. So scores and scores of reporters started calling these people, we later learned, and they were extremely incensed with us. Yet the reporters had legitimate questions. Why are you not allowing these people to have a radio station? They said, well, they said some lies. They said we demanded unlimited access to the building and all this equipment and space, none of which was true. We said we would cost you no money. We don't need any space at all. We can just run a wire into the building and hang an antenna from the roof, from one of the higher bleachers of the Astrodome. And it went back and forth and back and forth. People were tuning in daily. And as the Katrina disaster unfolded, of course, another big issue came up in Houston, something much more important to Houstonians than the lives of thousands of evacuees. It, of course, was football. The football season was coming to Houston, and they weren't about to have all these dirty Negroes running around their city in, with their problems.
By the way, folks, you're listening to WUML. The name of the program is Thinking Out Loud. We have on the line with us Jim Ellinger. He's telling us about his experiences with FEMA. He works for a Houston radio station down there. We have on the line also Jim Toomey. Continue, Jim.
Yeah. So, anyhow, ultimately, we, as more as a symbol than anything else, we borrowed a little Airstream trailer. Many people may have heard of this story as the Airstream trailer radio station. Hmm. And after days and days of work by lots of good folks from the Portland Indie Media, Santa Cruz Free Radio, Berkeley Free Radio, Houston Indie Media, our little group, Austin Airwaves, we managed to get on the air 6 watts at 6 meters for 6 days.
Wow.
But by then, the vast majority of the tens of thousands of evacuees had been ordered out of the Astrodome area. So it was largely a symbolic victory, but it showed quite clearly, irrefutably, that the FEMA officials and the Bush administration were clearly far more interested in their own good looks on TV,
mm-hmm,
and their appearance of responding to the need of Americans than the actual practical application of, well, we're having a communications need. This guy's got a license. It won't cost us anything. And, I mean, I actually had FEMA PR flacks trying to hand me press releases going, oh, great, can you read this on your radio station? I said, well, we're not on the air yet. Well, when you do, can you get this right on? Sure. But then these other officials said, oh, no. We're not about to let these people have their own radio stations and talk to themselves and for themselves. These are some angry people, and we're not going to allow that. So never had I seen in all my travels of the world and all my years of radio work a more bald-faced example of controlling access to the media, to denying radio services to people, mm-hmm, for such an ugly political reasons.
Well, that's the whole story of the way the Bush administration has managed media altogether. It's become, mm-hmm, it's his personal propaganda machine.
Yep. The only upside, and here we are 1 year later, I've been down to the Ninth Ward, it's still a disaster zone. There are still thousands of people strewn across the country, their lives are shattered. The only upside to the Katrina disaster is that it put the Bush administration on the defense. There was no denying that they had just put some money guy in as a patronage job in the head of FEMA, the Arabian Horse Association's president. With
Hoss
no
of
experience.
Would have gotten better.
Exactly. And in fact, I would, for those of your listeners there at WML who have HBO, I put a plug in, Spike Lee's movie, which is currently showing on HBO called The Day the Levees Break, is a moving, powerful drama, documentary about the failures of the government to save Americans. It is disturbing. It's not the fair for children.
Yeah.
But if you're at a friend's house with HBO and that's on, I would really put a plug in for Spike Lee's The Day the Levee Break.
Yeah, hang on a second, Jim.
Yep.
Dave, had you heard about Spike Lee's movie?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I thought it had another name, though. I thought that because there's a movie running on our cable television up here called The Day of Tears or something like that.
Yeah, well, this is I think it's a 6-hour movie. Is that right?
That's correct. Jim? It's a requiem in 4 parts. It runs about 4 or 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Day the Levees Broke.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends on a hopeful note. The first half ends on a very disturbing montage of as they say, the floated and the bloated.
Mm.
This would have been American citizens floating in the streets, dogs nipping at their faces.
Oh, my God.
It is, and it just goes on and on and on and on. It shows hysterical mothers as their grandmothers are dying at their feet. It shows, I mean, it's pretty disturbing. And it shows how the levees were poorly built and how when Bush said that nobody expected the levees to top, in fact, they did. They had had a rehearsal. And the Westlake, the New Orleans Picayune had done an excellent investigative piece about it. And these people continue to lie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The vice president was fly fishing during the disaster. Condoleezza Rice was shopping for shoes. These people, and this is an African-American woman from Mississippi, mind you, who was booed at the opera in New York City when people realized what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the only upside is, ever since then, the sheet has been pulled off these people, and they realize they're only there for the 1% who really control America, and the rest of us, as Jim Hightower can say, you know, would say, can just stand out here in the sun hoping for some scraps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, eventually, I think Spike Lee's movie will be available to everybody, I assume, on CD, hopefully.
On DVD,
shortly,
absolutely. Yeah.
So that we'd be able to see it, because it's really profound from what I've read about it. And there's such a need for people to put two and two together as to, you know, you hear the rhetoric and then you see the results of their actions, and they just don't correspond.
No,
mm-hmm.
no.
Mm-hmm.
And they continue to lie.
Oh, yeah.
They say, well, the one woman, Campbell Brown, I believe it was, of one of the cable news networks, who is generally a pretty moderate or conservative, certainly no Firebrand, no Amy Goodman, was interviewing Brown. They say, well, how could you not know? How could you not know? You know, I got a 20-year-old intern who brings me lattes, and she told me there was 20,000 people in the Superdome 2 days ago. How in the hell, she didn't say hell, but how could you not know?
Uh-huh.
And they just sat there and said, well, you know, we're a big bureaucracy, this and that, just lied to people,
mm-hmm.
bald-faced.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't like just corruption where the money disappeared.
People
were dying horrific
right.
death.
Go ahead. You know, incidentally, Brownie is starting to come clean now, which is refreshing to see.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen some interviews with him on the radio and TV lately.
I have seen some of those.
And, you know, he's coming out saying, listen, you know, I'm being made a fall guy here. In
mm-hmm.
fact, you know, I was backed into a corner where there wasn't much I could do. I'm not trying to make him look any better than what he is. But, in fact, the truth was he wasn't running the show at all.
That is absolutely correct. In fact, Spike Lee's movie makes the exact same
mm-hmm.
statements, where several black officials say, I never thought I'd be defending Brownie, but, in fact, it wasn't Brownie, it was Chertoff, because
right.
FEMA had been rolled into the Homeland Security. Homeland Security was Chertoff, and at that level, Chertoff said, nah, this isn't an issue for us right now. And Brownie was stuck in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm going to defend him either, but you're
right.
Absolutely right. Those stories are true, that Michael Chertoff, who didn't have a single thing, not a reprimand, not a firing, not a hanging from a tree, frankly, as these people died, shows the callous. And I have to say, you know, I'm an old, what we call, yellow dog Democrat. I'm an Austin liberal. I'm almost a stereotypical Austin liberal. I got a large, prominent family. And I'm at the point now, and I did the civil rights movement. I'm 53. I'm of the opinion now that if you see this Spike Lee movie, if you actually saw what happened in New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and you still vote Republican, how are you not racist? How are you not supporting these racist policies that kills black people? I mean, kills them bad, man,
mm-hmm.
left their bodies floating in the street. If you vote Republican still, just blindly support, well, I'm opposed to the homosexual agenda, and I don't like abortion, and I think we should fight these terrorists on their soil and not our soil. How is that not racist anymore?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really disappointed in the governor. What's her name? Blanco?
Blanco, yes.
Yeah, Blanco.
And you know, all you saw on Fox Channel and some of these other channels was about the looters, you know,
yes.
going into stores and looting.
Right.
And she got into it, and she says, you know, she was going to do something like, you know, shoot the looters or whatever.
Right.
Just think about it. The stores that they were breaking in were food stores.
Mm-hmm.
The food was going to be ruined at the end
That's
of this
right.
anyway. Why didn't the governor and why didn't the mayor, why didn't the president, for that matter, say, listen, forget about looting, just break into the stores, get as much food as you can, water and soda or whatever you can to keep alive, and we'll take care of it later, which they had to do anyway.
Well, and they had to save the Cadillacs, too. Let us not forget who looted, who stole 60 Cadillacs from downtown New Orleans Cadillac dealership. It was the NOPD. This is a well-known documented fact that, in fact, in Spike Lee's movie, it shows police going out with DVD players and DVDs under their arms, and 60 Cadillacs were stolen by the New Orleans Police Department in downtown New Orleans during the height of the disaster. I mean,
they weren't using them for police cars, were they?
No, they sure won't, they surely were not.
That's small potatoes compared to the looting that was done by the big corporations that got all kinds of money given to them and did nothing useful with it, right?
I mean, the cleanup contractors.
Even the Red Cross. And, you know, I have friends who are higher-ups in the Red Cross, and God bless the Red Cross. They have saved countless lives over the years. But even the Red Cross kind of fumbled here. Because there were, I haven't got time to tell you all the stories about people just going down with their bass boat and an ice chest full of food and a couple guns and a lot of water and radios and just heading on down to do their own saving, were returned back by FEMA roadblocks because they didn't have the proper work. I mean, what we do every year for ourselves here in Austin, Texas, good old live music capital of the world, Austin, Texas, a real fun place to be. Every year for 9/11, we leave America on 8 hours' notice. And I'm not a paranoid personality, folks. This is not an Alex Jones type person or radio personality from Austin who's kind of the black helicopter guy. But we're very concerned that if that thin veneer of civility, of law and order, the thin blue line, breaks down, that we may have to contend with the police looting and stuff. So we're prepared to leave the country on 8 hours' notice, and we're going to do another rehearsal here on the 9/11 weekend.
Well, why don't we talk about that some other time, Jim?
Okay.
It's nice to have you on Thinking Out Loud on WUML, and, you know, it's great to hear your story and, you know, somebody with direct experience as to the hypocrisy that happened and which cost so many lives in the aftermath of Katrina.
Yeah, and I want to sort of shout out to you, Dan, and the rest of the folks there at WUML who are kind enough to offer to host the Grassroots Radio Conference. It's going to be held there in Lowell next July. I'll be there.
Uh-huh.
If you're a supporter of WUML, let me tell you, you guys got a great radio station. People know about your station across the country.
Woo!
We'll be coming to Lowell next July. We expect to be showing a very good time.
Okay.
Well, you'll definitely have a good time in Lowell because we know how to have a good time here in Lowell. Hey, Jim, thanks very much for being
on.
We really enjoyed having you with us, and have a great day.
You too, guys.